So let's get into the rapid fire news. And now that I think about it, I gotta get like a nice little transition tune to go with this, because I have to record sort of manually using Audacity instead of through the Spotify thing. So it's probably sounds a little bit weird on your end if you're listening to me, where I'd usually break up, you know, each segment, and I'd go and they had that pause, and then all of a sudden I'm picking up right where I left off, but in a way that doesn't seem fluid. Yeah, it's. I'm just now realizing that I'll eventually get around to it. But you know we will cover the news however ghetto we have to do it. So let's go over the rapid fire. A lot has happened, and you know what? It makes it so much easier for me. So we'll start with this story that we talked about last week, where 287 Nigerian kids were kidnapped from school by armed gunmen / militants / organized criminals. You know, they all, for whatever reason, people who do crimes like these, when they're in Africa, they're always referred to as gunmen and whatnot. But anyway, if they're in anywhere else, they're referred to as terrorists, or you'd refer to the name of their, you know, their criminal syndicate. But for whatever reason, they're always referred to as gunmen, so it makes it a little awkward to, you know, refer to who I'm talking to. But they kidnapped 287 kids, and last week I said, how do you just walk away with almost 300 kids? But they're back now. Well, not the kids, the people who stole them. And they're now demanding a ransom of $620,000 for the ransomed kids. I could do the math, but that roughly breaks down to, well, if there's 300 kids, 620,000, that's about $2,000 a kid, you know, $2,000 a kid, little give or take, because there's less than 300, but there's more than 600,000 that they're demanding. $2,000 a pop is wild for kids that you stole. So we hope that they get back to their home safely. We hope that nothing happens to them in the meantime, because just because they get back alive doesn't mean abuse of various kinds may or may not have happened. Case in point, our own southern border, where every kind of abuse that imaginable against a human being is being committed. But they're still alive, and they're still here, you know, but that doesn't mean they aren't being sex trafficked and child trafficking, human trafficking. Bad things can happen when you're in the hands of bad people. And so, for the good of humanity, we'll just hope that these kids make it back safe. And for the good of humanity, we'll hope that Trump wins and we can get our border under control, you know. There we go. In other news, we have the Indian farmers taking to their own streets, demanding mandatory minimum prices for their produce. Now, these farmers are obviously protesting for very different reasons than the farmers in, say, Europe, who are fighting back against these odd, well, not odd, straight-up anti-humanist, I almost said anti-climate. Well, I mean, it is anti-climate. These people don't really care about the climate. They just don't like people. Fighting back against these green policies of you have to stop producing food, and you notice that it's always about cutting back on food production. You can't grow your cattle, you have to cull your herds, you have to stop growing food, it's producing too much nitrogen, and you know, always targeting the food production so that people can't eat, and then they want you to eat bugs. But you have the farmers in Europe, they've been fighting back against this, and it's spread from the Netherlands all the way across all of Northern Europe, basically. And they're going to win that struggle, because there's only so much people can do when they can't eat. When they go to the grocery store and the shelves are empty, the farmers will just get their way. Unless the government is willing to use military force to compel them back to the fields, so to speak. Which, so far, none of the militaries or governments in Europe are willing to do. I'm sure the militaries are much more reluctant than the governments are, but I'll digress. It would probably look really bad if you used your military to go put down a revolt in your own country while you're accusing the Russians and every other country of being authoritarian dictatorships. But granted, Europe, United States, the whole transatlantic world as of late isn't exactly the most hypocrisy-ridden place in the world, as much as it is the most hypocritic world in the world. So we will see what happens with these farmers. But as it stands, if all goes accordingly, they're probably going to get their way, and Europe is going to be forced, and I say forced, I'm really just talking about the anti-humanists running European governments right now, they will be forced to abandon course on these policies of anti-humanism and depopulation, because that's what the Green Agenda is. And I've gone over it many times, but at some point in the future, when I go off on that rant again, I'll explain, but it basically comes down to energy, fueling industry, and without industry, you can't maintain industrial-era populations, which is exactly what they want. They don't want to maintain those populations. It's anti-humanist. But the farmers in India are protesting for very different reasons. They are protesting because of their ability to live. They want mandatory minimum price. They want price controls, but not to keep prices down, which is usually what price controls are implemented to do, with varying degrees of success and varying consequences that come with them. But what the Indian farmers want is a mandatory price hike. They want to keep prices high. That's, you know, you've never heard of that one before. A mandatory price control, well, if the price control, that is mandatory, but a price control to keep the price up. Now that, well, actually, I think something like that happened in the United States during the Great Depression, now that I think about it. But it's not usual. It's not the norm. But that's what they're demanding, because they say otherwise it'll be unlivable for them to make a living. It'll be impossible for them to make a living by farming. And although you'd think that with a billion mouths to feed, it would be really easy to sell your goods, but I guess when you're competing with as many farmers as there are people in Texas, it probably gets really difficult. Actually, I don't know how many farmers India has. Maybe I'll look that up. I wouldn't be surprised if they had a whole country's worth of people as just dedicated farmers. But I'll digress. They have sort of been clashing with the government under Narendra Modi for quite some time. There was a similar style protest to what you see in Europe. And what you saw with the trucker convoys, that happened with farmers in India years before COVID. Years before the COVID lockdowns, and you had massive lines of Indian farmers that were on their way to New Delhi, and the Indian government caved and gave them what they wanted. So how this is likely to play out, I'm not entirely sure. Either the Indian government caves and gives them this mandatory price hike, right? This mandatory minimum price for their produce, or the Indian government starts brokering new deals for international trade, and then tries to provide some avenue for family farmers to get in on that international trade. It's a interesting, you know, sort of comparison between farmers' protests in India versus farmers' protests in Europe, and it really just demonstrates the different natures of these societies at the current moment, where India is not having to deal with the anti-humanist plight that has infected governments in Europe and the United States. Their government is very much pro-Indian and pro-human, but it also demonstrates that even on the other side of this battle for our sovereignty, it's not going to be heaven on earth, right? It's going to be back to normal. And normal still has problems, normal still has challenges, and normal still has heartbreak and hardship. So as we move forward, even as we're hopeful for a brighter future, understand that for as bright as the future can be and probably will be once we get rid of these people, there's still going to be hardship on the other side of that, as evidenced by nations who already are on the other side of that struggle. But I'll digress. we have Ukraine launching another one of their cross-border raids into Belgorod, which is the Russian oblast, or think of a state in the United States, which is the Belgorod oblast right across the border from Ukraine. They've gone into Russia again. I think this is their third time doing so. And it is their third time failing. Failing to achieve anything useful, that is. I mean, if their goal was to send men to die in Russia, well, they've succeeded. If their goal was to waste precious military vehicles and equipment that can't be replaced, they've succeeded. I do not think these are the goals of the Ukrainian military. I'll at least give them that much. So, this is a failure. A failure, some are calling it a PR stunt, others are calling it a daring raid into Russia, bringing the war to Russia, you know, all this silly thing. Some are calling it election interference, because it happened while Russia was in the middle of its presidential elections, where Putin won, of course, and Putin won with like 87.8, I say like as if I don't have the number in front of me, 87.8% of the vote. But, yeah, they've done this raid into Russia. They've achieved nothing. They've lost more men. They've lost more equipment. And they can't afford to lose either. Like, it's not like we're dealing with World War I or World War II Russian Empire or the Soviet Union, where they have the men and it's just the equipment that they can't necessarily afford to lose. No, we're dealing with a country that is low on manpower and low on resources. Their economy doesn't function on its own without billions of dollars worth of aid being pumped in by other countries, namely the United States. And the military equipment that they're using, they don't produce themselves. It is produced in other countries, and said other countries are not able to produce these weapons at equivalent rates to how fast they're being destroyed in Ukraine, right? So, understand that Ukraine is in a position to lose neither men nor equipment, and they've thrown away both in every single one of these raids into Belgorod. Ukraine is desperate. Ukraine is desperate, and NATO is desperate. I'll talk a little bit more about the desperation of NATO later on in the episode when I get into more statements from Emmanuel Macron. He's just on a roll. He's taking all the crazy pills, except that they're the pills that make you crazy instead of the pills that make the voices go away. But yeah, it's sad. In a way it's sad, you know. I sit here on my side of the ocean where I'm content to stay and where I wish my government would keep its attention. But looking at Ukraine, they would have made peace. But they were surrounded, like Israel right now, they were surrounded with fake friends who led them astray. They were surrounded with people who did not have their best interest in mind. And even inside of Ukraine, they were being led by people who didn't have Ukraine's best interest in mind. And to an extent, you can, you know, put a little bit of the blame onto the Ukrainians, right? Because they are their own country. But then you realize, like, even when you do that, you also have to realize that at the end of the day, this is not a government of, by, and for Ukrainians. It's not, and I don't mean that in the sense of, oh, it's a thriving democracy for the Ukrainians, because there are plenty of government types that regular people can, you know, co-sign and buy into, and you can see this over the course of human history. Democracy, Republican, this is relatively new in the grand scheme of things, so don't take it that way. But this is not a Ukrainian government. This is an installed government. We installed this government in 2014. And the elections that have happened up until now, since 2014, have all been in the context of us controlling and pulling the strings in Ukraine. So when we look at, even then, the Ukrainian leadership being willing to negotiate a peace with Russia, and we come in pulling the strings and keeping them from doing that, we are responsible for what happens to Ukraine. And we have this short-sighted, and really fake, if we're being honest. Well, it's actually both of them are true. Some people are just short-sighted, and they just want to get at Russia. And other people are being really fake when they say that they care about Ukraine, and they put the flags in their bios, and they fly the flags on their houses, the Ukrainian flag, and they have the Stop Putin, Stop War bumper sticker. You know, you have all this fake outrage and this fake concern for a country that would have been better off had we done literally nothing. Had we done literally nothing, they'd be better off. And yet, because of the intervention, because of this fake, we care about you, because of this fake moral outrage about Russia invading a country, oh my God, you can never invade a country, don't look at us, that's whataboutism. All this fake, this two-faced duplicitousness coming out of the halls of our government that have led the Ukrainians away from a peace treaty that would have ended this war in months, where the kill counts would be similar to what we're seeing in Gaza. Instead, they go down the path that we made for them. And who knows how many are going to be dead by the end of this. Colonel Douglas McGregor, Scott Ritter, they're putting the number at 500,000 deaths. Now, they're usually ahead by like 2-3 months when they give these numbers, you know. Or it could be that the information just doesn't catch up to the rest of us for 2-3 months on delay. They're actually just on time, and we're all at a delay. And that's those of us who are keeping up with the numbers. And there's the rest of them. There's the rest of us who actually think Ukraine's going to win. And they don't even... They think that the Russians are the ones who've lost 300,000 men. And that the Ukrainians have lost around 100,000. We are responsible for this. So, and it is sad. It is sad when you see that Ukraine is just fighting this futile struggle against a country that they can never win against, and the people and their own leadership would have made peace. And I'm talking about the leadership that we control. They're our puppet state, and they all just that brief moment of clarity, that brief moment of exercising the little bit of, you know, independence and sovereignty that they had almost saved their country. But we stepped in and made sure that wasn't going to happen. And now they're stuck. They're stuck. They're fighting a war that they can't win. They've lost multiple generations of men. They will never demographically or financially recover from this. Ukraine as a nation from this point forward will really only exist in its diaspora. Because with such an absence of men, the remainder of the women who are still there, mind you, because a lot of people left, the women who are still there are probably just going to marry into whoever the new inhabitants of the land are, and that's going to be Russian men. I would not be surprised if after this war, the Russians have their own version of a homestead act where they entice young Russian families to come move into all this new territory they acquired, when they use incentives to get big Russian business and Russian small business to move into and start utilizing the land and the resources. And I wouldn't be surprised if after this war, Russia has a baby boom. And Ukraine? Who will know? Who will know? So it is sad watching them sort of flounder like this, knowing that we could end it right now if we just stop giving them weapons. And that would be more humane than what is happening right now, where we just let them go on and die by the thousands every day. It is sad. And on the other side, there's going to be Russia, and Russia is going to rebuild Ukraine. So I suppose there is a light at the end of that tunnel for the Ukrainians, the ones who live anyway. And last but not least, we have a whistleblower at Boeing, John Barnett. He was found dead with gunshot wounds in his body. Now, why would a whistleblower just magically wind up dead in his truck outside of his hotel? in a free and thriving democracy where we would never do these types of things to political opponents. We would never do these types of things because, you know, in Russia, if you go up against the oligarchs, they're going to get you. They're going to throw you out of a window on the 20th floor, right? We would never do that. We have freedom. Well, he's a whistleblower against one of our oligarchs, Boeing. You know, the same Boeing who's in bed with the government as a part of the military-industrial complex, the same Boeing that makes damn near all of our military aircraft. Right alongside Lockheed Martin, you know. He goes up against them, and now he wakes up dead. But Navalny, oh yeah, poisoned and killed in his prison cell. Yeah. You know, it's the level of projection becomes more clear by the second at this point. That the very nature that our empire accuses Russia and China and every other country that they don't like of being, that is actually the nature of the people we are fighting against in our own country. To where American citizens wake up dead for exposing a corporation. Think about that. American citizens, that should be the headline, plastered across every honest news outlet. American citizen wakes up dead for trying to expose corporation. Because that's what happened here. And let's look at what he exposed, shall we? Let's look at what he exposed. What did John Barnett do that was so profound that it warranted multiple gunshots and multiple bullets, so to speak, being put into his body? What did he do that made it so bad for the corporations that they said this guy has to bite the bullet, literally? Well, let's go over it. What did he say? Well, he exposed poor working conditions, people who were being overworked, people who were unqualified for the job being allowed on, you know, things that you would expect wouldn't happen at an aerospace facility manufacturing airplanes. You know, you'd think that there'd be quality controls starting with the kinds of people you let onto the production line. But no. We have crackheads. We have crackheads building 747s and 787s and 777s. Suddenly it makes sense, you know? Because we've been hearing stories for years about the faulty planes that have been rolling off the assembly lines at Boeing, where it was the 747, then it was the 777, now it's the 787, and you hear these stories of these planes that Boeing are making just falling out the fucking sky and crashing, and not landing properly. They're fucking falling apart in the middle of the air, and you're having these emergency landings. People losing their lives over this negligence at Boeing. A deliberate negligence. I mean, there's no way a crackhead is passing the background check or the drug test, for that fucking matter. And then you see that they have drugs in their system, and you say, that's perfectly fine, welcome to the team. There's no way you do that. There's no way you do that without in any accidental manner. You can do it intentionally. There's a way you can do it. It's called intentional. But there's no way you do this accidentally. This is intentional. They allowed this to happen through their terrible business practices. Terrible business practices. Like, look, I could understand if you were a crack dispensary. If you were a cocaine dispensary, I bet your ass you'd be hiring those crackheads. They'd be the best salesman ever. They'd be... It's just like how every weed dispensary has a fucking pothead, has a whole team of potheads. Because who better to advertise your stuff than the people who do it? I mean, come on now. Who better to work there than the people who actually want to use this shit? I guess in some cases it might not work out. They might consume their supply, and you're supposed to sell that and not you just use it up. But as far as marketing goes, you want someone who uses it. But this is not... This is not the crack house. At least it's not supposed to be. That's the White House. But no, this is supposedly a high-end manufacturing facility of one of our biggest corporations. one of our most highly valued companies in the country hiring unqualified people to make vehicles that people's lives depend on. Forget a livelihood if you have to travel across the country a lot. Your life is in the hands of your pilot and the person who made your plane. And the people making your planes are setting you up for failure. That's criminal. So right off the bat, we can see exactly why this guy woke up dead with gunshots in his body, in his car. But that wasn't all he exposed. That's all he exposed. Let's go over a little bit more. Because he would do this in like video form. So he would just walk around filming and asking people, you know, and the people, God bless them, to the extent that they were willing to speak up. They spoke up. They didn't sit there and go, oh, I don't want to comment, you know, oh, I'm not comfortable, you know, all that pussy shit. They sat there and said, oh yeah. Here's the problem. Here, and here. They're not putting in these bolts right when they drill them in. They're not using proper measurements for the distance between the bolt, because, you know, you're supposed to use proper measurements when you're manufacturing things, you know, like especially delicate craft, like, I don't know, an airplane or a jet liner. You know, when you put the rivets in, you're supposed to space them out in a certain way so the vehicle is stable. You know, they're not doing that. They're not doing that. They're not using proper measurements. So, what are you, the boys doing the design work? Fuck all that. We're just gonna slap some duct tape on this bitch and it'll fly. It's like, what the hell's that? Okay, I'm exaggerating about the duct tape, but I'm not exaggerating about the rivets. And they're talking about there was even admissions from people working there, like, and they're on video talking about how other people working there have serious drug problems, so serious that it was to the point where people would, on their lunch break, go shoot up drugs while on the job. And it's like, what is happening? And he would ask. I remember in one video I saw, he asked them, "Would you fly on this?" He asked like a number of people, "Would you fly on this? Would you fly on this?" Every single one of them said no. Every single one of them said no. They work on these planes. They work on these planes, and some of them have been there at this fucking plant for years, saying they would not fly on the planes that they are rolling off the assembly lines, that they are working on themselves, because they can see the problem every time they go to work. And we only see the problem when the plane crashes, which, thank God, more aren't crashing, but we shouldn't even be at this point. We truthfully should not even be at this point. But this is where we are. This is where we are. And for the crime of exposing criminally bad business practices, for exposing criminally bad and criminally negligent business practices on the assembly line, criminally poor quality controls and criminally poor job screening for the people you're employing at Boeing, for the crime of exposing the criminality of the company that is Boeing, or at this point we may as well call them the criminal syndicate that is Boeing, John Barnett wakes up dead in his truck outside of his hotel for exposing corporation. And crickets from our moral superiors in the corporate press. Crickets. Now, had this happened in Russia, oh my God, Putin silencing his critics. This is why with these authoritarian countries, the whole shtick, the whole shebang about how every country is just terrible. Now, granted, I have no intention of living anywhere other than the United States myself, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend that my country is perfect. But to the degree that my country is not perfect, and to the degree that any other country is not perfect, this is unacceptable. This is just downright unacceptable. And what will the consequences be? Is the FBI actually going to find out who perpetrated this? Or are they just going to sit there and say we're investigating it for 5 million years? Or are they actually going to find out who did it? I don't know. Maybe they'll find some guy and say, oh yeah, he was on a watch list for 5 years, and we did nothing about him. It's like, okay, well you're worthless. You're worthless. That would not be new information. We already know that. And just look at every school shooting ever. Oh yeah, they were on a watch list, and so you have them on a watch list, but you're not watching them. Okay, so what's the point of the watch list? If we're going to live in an authoritarian state, if we're going to live in a security state, I at least want some damn security. Like, come on now. But this is insane. This is where we're at. This is the criminality of the people we are fighting. Just put out in plain view. Not even hiding it. Not even attempting to hide it. And everyone knows. Everyone who is honest knows that this was silencing. That this wasn't just, oh, he got caught up in the wrong place at the wrong time. No, he was silenced. And everyone knows it. It's too hard not to see it. And what are the consequences going to be? If I love how the Boeing, their spokesperson, says, we're deeply... We send our condolences to John's family. We send our condolences. Yeah, we wish him well. We wish him the best. He was just such a good person, reporting on all of our misdeeds. And it's just such a shame that we won't be able to see him in court when he testifies against us. This is where we're at. You challenge the oligarchs and you die now. This is where we're at. So it's that much more important that we start taking notes from what Vladimir Putin did to get his oligarchs in check, from what Bukele did to get his criminal syndicate running his country in check. Because winning an election isn't going to solve this, right? Well, first things first, you got to get the people out who advocate for this, people who cover for this, you have to get them out of power. And I'm talking the entire establishment, or at least enough of the establishment that pro-America can become the majority in both houses of Congress. Like, that has to be the starting point, because if you don't do that, then this insanity continues unabated. But just winning an election isn't going to solve this. This will take trials. These people have to be held criminally responsible. They will have to testify before, if it's not Congress, then lawsuits upon lawsuits upon lawsuits. This cannot stand if we are to be a free republic, which we think we are, but every day that goes by, we're reminded that those days as they stand are behind us. They can be in front of us again, but that's going to take work. That's going to take a lot of work. That's going to take accountability. More than anything else, it's going to take accountability. Now, Trump, he says that we're not going to have time for revenge and that the ultimate revenge will be success. And that is true, right? Revenge might taste sweet, but if we're all impoverished on the other side and America just fades off and, you know, implodes and dies after we get our revenge, it's not going to be as sweet. But success in the face of all this attempt to destroy us, all these attempts to destroy us as a nation, that is the ultimate, revenge. But it will not be enough to make up for what is happening. It is in the long term, that's what we want. But in the medium term, you can't just let things like this slide. That sets a terrible precedent. The precedent has to be set that you don't get away with this nonsense. This nonsense, whether that's you perpetrating it or you covering up for it, like the corporate press, the propaganda press is doing, like many people in our government are doing by literally turning a blind eye to the actions of a corporation that our government is in bed with. Boeing. That we give billions of dollars to. Boeing. You know? If he's exposing shitty quality control at a factory for regular people, because these planes are for regular people to fly on, and they're making planes and vehicles for our military, then that means that the criminal negligence doesn't just apply to civilian liners. It would also reasonably apply to the quality control of military aircraft that Boeing is producing for us. And perhaps that is why John Barnett is dead. Because it's not just Boeing he's exposing. It is the U.S. military as well. Because Boeing makes stuff for our military. So if Boeing is making subpar aircraft for regular people, then what kind of a standard are they using for military aircraft? And what if we can see what's slipping through the cracks? Oh well, you can't even call it the cracks anymore. What's falling through the vent, so to speak? You know how when you go to your vent, the vent's on your floor, and you take the top off, and you can actually fit your hand down there. Yeah, that's the vent right now. So we're seeing through what John Barnett exposed, what has slipped through the vent. So, and what slipped through the vent is ugly. What slipped through the vent is criminal negligence. What slipped through the vent is crackheads and the quality of work you can expect from said crackheads. But if this is what civilian passengers are getting out of their jetliners, what exactly is our military getting? And does our military know about it? Because if they know about it, and they still sign off on this, that is treason. If they know about faulty equipment, and they've taken no action to get Boeing to fix said problems and said faulty equipment, and they're having our pilots fly these vehicles without prior knowledge that these vehicles may or may not fail them because of because of issues that happened on the production lines. That's treason. That is treason against our country, against our soldiers. That's treason. And perhaps that may be the reason John Barnett was assassinated. Let's call it what it is. He was assassinated. Almost JFK style. It wasn't as bad as JFK. I meant to say Martin Luther King style. JFK, wow. I meant to say Martin Luther King style, but JFK came to mind. You know, when I think of assassinations and I think of one of them, I think of both of them at the same time, so it sort of just slipped up. But yeah, MLK style is how this guy was basically assassinated right outside of his hotel. At least he made it down to his truck before getting assassinated. Martin Luther King didn't even have that luxury. I mean, think about it. He could have just been going out, even, you know, because they made the threat that if he goes to give that speech, they're going to kill him. Imagine if he had actually said, you know what, I'm not going to go make that speech, but I'm going to go get me a burger. And he walks outside the door and gets fucking popped. You know how mad I'd be? I would haunt that guy for the rest of his life. But I'll digress. This is either A, criminal negligence, or B, treason. These are the two tiers that we're working with here. Because there's no way that all of this just slip through the quality controls, just slip through the higher-ups at Boeing, just slip through, you know, the people who sit there and hire people. They just slip through all the managers, just slip through the departments and corporate. There's no way that they are that unaware of their own assembly lines, of the people who work on their own assembly lines. There's no way. There's no way. And especially with how it was common knowledge among the people who were actually working there. So you're telling me that a manager wouldn't have noticed? You're telling me that one of those people who come by every now and then to do inspections on-site inspections, you're telling me they wouldn't have noticed? They wouldn't have noticed the behaviors of people growing up? You're telling me that they wouldn't have looked into some of these files and said, oh, that guy's a crackhead, maybe he shouldn't be... None of them noticed? They didn't notice that these people failed the drug test, and that they were hired anyway. They wouldn't. There's no way. None of that is accident. If you could get away with one of those and say, "Oh, it was an accident," on like, but you can't get away with all of those across supposedly a sizable number of people working at these plants. There's no way unless it was an intentional oversight on behalf of Boeing. So the starting point is criminal negligence on a multitude of levels. The high end is treason against the United States. Once you factor in the military and the potential consequences of deliberately handing off faulty equipment to the military, and then military themselves taking this equipment and not doing anything to fix it, and neither side working to fix it either, the military or Boeing, because Boeing is clearly doing nothing to solve these issues. That is so. From criminal negligence to treason against the United States is what we're working with here. So, and that's what makes this story one of the things that makes this story so big. The other one, as I expressed earlier, is that again, what should have been the headline plastered from wall to wall is American wakes up dead for exposing corporation. This cannot stand. This shit cannot stand. So I wanted to cover this story. Give a little bit of 2 cents on it. Because this is the future that these people want for us. If you speak out against them, you die. That is the degree to which they hate free speech. Like, understand it's not just about canceling you for having a bad opinion. They want to be able to silence you permanently. Not through kicking you off of a social media platform, you know. Not by debanking you and making so you can't have, you know, economic viability or financial solvency of any kind. No, they want you silenced, put to sleep, so to speak. They want you sleeping with the fishes, on ice, if you speak out against them or their cronies. And this is exactly the type of thing we have to fight against as Americans. Our values as a nation are being tested, right? We are being tested as a nation. Now, again, the starting point for fixing this is getting rid of the people who allow this. We have to get a majority pro-America in both houses of Congress. But that's just the starting point. We have a lot to fix in this country, and this sort of just exemplifies the spectrum of what we have to fix. A good chunk of the spectrum of what we have to fix. We have to fix free speech, make it actually free, right? We have to fix the bloat in our bureaucracy and our military so that shit like this doesn't happen. And we have to fix our industrial base. Because this shouldn't be happening on any reasonable assembly line. The decay of the American manufacturing is also put on full display here as a sort of secondary issue. The first being that an American died because he tried to expose a corporation. That is a violation of the First Amendment in every way, shape, and form. But that is the story of the Boeing whistleblower.